overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
For whom the bell tolls. The bell tolls for thee. A member of our congregation gifted us with some beautiful art, statues of Shiva, Ganesh, Buddha, and a very big bell, which has a resonant sound. And if you've ever traveled to a Buddhist monastery, they ring the bell intentionally to take you to that still small point within. And so when I was with Thich Nhat Hanh in the year 2000 on a 10-day silent retreat, you would be walking through the grounds and all of a sudden you'd hear a dong and you would stop. You would take one breath in, another breath out, another breath in, another breath out, another breath in, and another breath out. And then you would continue walking meditation. And this went on for 10 days of silence. Every now and then, dong, stop, take an in-breath, take an out-breath. And this practice established the mind in a field of awareness that was always there. You can call it open-hearted awareness, an awareness that will sustain you even when the mind is going crazy, beloved Anastasia, if you can just consciously breathe. This Sunday, I'm exploring a really brilliant idea that was inspired by this book. It's called The Book of Soul. It's Mark Nepo's 52 Paths of Living What Matters. And he goes deeply into some simple ideas. The first one is about the big reveal, which is what I'm speaking about this month, that we're here to reveal our true nature, which is our divine nature. That's what we're all here to do. I started with this idea of the pull of existence, and I told the Sufi story of the ocean of love luring the little stream back to the source. Now, the stream was perfectly happy being an independent little stream on a mountaintop until the call of the ocean was so deep that the stream had to let go of its identity, its attachments, and trust the journey, the path home to where it belonged. My Zen calendar, and you know, everything in life is pointing to the truth. My Zen calendar this morning said, take one step out of yourself and you're on the path. Hello. So what if the self that we seem to identify with is the place of tyranny? It's our little mind. It's our ideas, our concepts, our beliefs, our attachments, our projections, our expectations, our attachment. You go on and on and on and on. When you take one step out of me, you're on this pathless path, and you get to experience the pull of existence, something that so loves you that it's calling you home. And then we get to let go of what we think is so important. Last week, the Zen calendar said, Buddhism boils down to three simple things. I love it when it's three simple things. Everything changes, everything is attached, so pay attention. Everything changes. So could we embrace change when it happens in our lives, even if it's a painful change? You know, I'm losing my beloved dog, Bert. He's making his transition. And yet, having him still on the planet, I'm seeing the sacredness of the practice with him. He's my great teacher now about patience. He's my teacher about compassion. And he's my teacher about just having a simple life. Who would have thought that a bowel movement would be so significant at this stage of my evolution? When your dog hasn't pooped in 2 days, you know, you pray for regularity. And then when he does have an accident, you pray for forgiveness and acceptance. So what a great teacher. So in this journey of the big reveal, after I spoke about the pull of existence, I explored always part of something larger. That was the second week. That there is this something larger that we are a part of. People laughingly reflect on this little article that's in the classroom over there. It's a very young David Leonard, maybe 30 years ago. And we used to have a little newsletter that would go out monthly, and it was called Growing Aware. And there's a very young picture of me, and I'm quoting an anonymous source who says, first, you believe in Santa Claus. Second, you don't believe in Santa Claus. Third, you are Santa Claus. Now, the simplicity of that quote is, first, you believe in a God. Perhaps you placed him on a cloud in the sky with a big gold G around his neck, who's judging people, and you have this belief system just like a Santa Claus. But then you realize you don't believe in that. Who would want a God, as my beloved daughter Terry said, who would destroy the planet and then give you a rainbow? I mean, who wants that kind of God? A wrathful, angry God who hates and judges gay people, for instance, an abomination in God's eyes. My God, that's the same God that said you shall not eat shellfish. Could we get ourselves a new God? And ultimately realize that all there is God, and if all there is God, well, guess what that makes you and me? So last week I explored the idea of the fire of aliveness. And that's the fire of the aliveness of our soul. And that fire of aliveness meets the fire of circumstances. We have a lot of circumstances going on the planet. You know, when I came home the other week because it was Gay Pride Week, and I'm driving home from Sunday service, there's a big sign, usually it's the anti-abortion thing, but this Sunday it was about LGBTQ Pride Week, and then they showed a building being exploded on this billboard, and honk if you agree. And I just went, could I find that still point within myself and not find judgment, not find reaction, not find a resentment? Could I just be at peace with this kind of crazy world that we live in? So the fire of aliveness has to meet the fire of circumstances, and when it does, then we have the courage to speak out. I talked last week about Jamal Khashoggi in this beautiful Showtime documentary called The Kingdom of Silence, and how over there in Saudi Arabia, when Arab Spring happened, they literally, like Kent State, they shot all the peaceful protesters who were wanting democracy. When I first came here to Huntsville in 1989, it was very significant because Tiananmen Square happened right before I came here to Huntsville, where these young protesters were saying, we want democracy. And they were let, no, we're not gonna have democracy here in China. Right after I came here in 1989, the Berlin Wall came down. And I thought, well, this is a significant time. That's the fire of aliveness meeting the fire of circumstances. And Anastasia knows what that's all about. You face it. And you face it with courage, and you face it with conviction. Rosa Parks did not go to the back of the bus. She sat down and she said, I'm okay with being who I am. So this week, the last of this big reveal from this insightful book, I'm speaking about the student self and the teacher self. And Mark Nepo tells this wonderful story of Ramana Maharshi, the great enlightened teacher, when a young student like you, Angkor, said to him, can you tell me, Master, what my practice should be? I'm really working hard at this enlightenment thing with my pranayams and my meditations and my mantras and all that sort of stuff. And he says to the young man, just attend to the self. And then he argued for that. Well, I need some strategy. You need to tell me what to do. And then Ramana, or through Mark Nepo, said, the student wants the technique, how to get rid of the problem and how to find the solution. But the teacher self knows that it's merely a shift in how you see it. When you see it not as a problem, but as an opportunity to reframe the way we look at things, then the things you look at change. Anastasia's nodding her head. She understands this message. You're moving from the student self to the teacher self. Let me give you just a taste of what he says. So the student within us is looking for time management skills, while the teacher within us is offering a different way of apprehending reality. It's not a good day or a bad day. It's not a disease that we struggle with. It's just an experience that we're having. And then when we open, like my beloved Bert is having old dog syndrome. Could I just be with old dog syndrome instead of wanting young dog syndrome? You know, he says, well, you know, I can't run like I used to. And my hips, they don't work. And I kind of fall over sometimes and my head hits the floor. Well, so I said, that's why I'm here, to pick you up and stabilize you. So I'm not expecting a solution, but rather I'm expecting a shift in the way David is approaching everything. He goes on to explain this. It's important to acknowledge that both the student self and the teacher soul are essential to our life here on earth. When I was a brand new minister in 1989, you get this little manual, and they have the 5 points about being a minister, but the first one I'll always remember. It says, a teacher of truth is first and foremost a student of truth. You're always a student. After 33 years of ministry, I'm still courting that beginner's mind and that beginner's heart. Now, we were talking about the beauty of our teaching, but Dr. Ernest Holmes says it's opened at the top. So could we explore the imponderable, not from a fixed perspective? A beloved friend of mine gave me an article from Ralph Waldo Emerson and how Ralph Waldo Emerson would embrace what's going on our planet right now with the pandemic and with all this turbulence with our government. And they spoke about his resilience and how he didn't cave in when adversity would hit him. His beautiful young wife, Ellen Tucker, he married her when he was 17. She was 17. He was like 20. She dies 2 years later of tuberculosis. It destroyed him. Then his brother Edward dies. And then his brother Andrew dies. He gets married, a loveless marriage, but they have 3 children. After 5 years, his little boy Waldo dies of scarlet fever. And what Emerson says in all this, he says, one thing that grief has shown me, as devastating as it was, is how shallow it is. And it took him to a higher order of being, where the teacher's soul realized that spirit was never born and never dies. So what if when we face adversity that's uncomfortable, it's here to be a doorway to a greater order of understanding? So the student self and the teacher self work simultaneously in this beautiful dance. Let me give you the final little gift that he gave me here. Without our student self managing this ride that we have through existence, we wouldn't be able to survive in our world. But without the teacher soul calling us into the wonders of just being alive, survival would become pointless. So this teacher self, this teacher soul is awakening within us. And it's basically inviting us to shift out of the local mind into the non-local mind, to shift out of me into a strange sort of sense, a we, and to let that unfold in its beautiful way. That little article that Anne-Marie gave on Emerson launched me this morning into going through my library. I've got like 20 books on Emerson, and I'm pulling them out and I'm reading Emerson. And in 1840 something, he gave what they called the American Scholar, his first address at Harvard. And they call it the Declaration of Independence for All Students. And basically what he said to them was, he said, let go of your God of the intellect and let go of your God of tradition and let your soul be set on fire with the same fire that ignited those who've gone before you. So basically he was saying, we do not need to regurgitate what other people have thought. We need to discover a truth that's organic and alive within us. And then he would say, beware when the universe unleashes an original thinker. So could we know that each one of us is here to reveal that something that is bigger than us, and it's not going to look like what the world would give you? Then we say yes when the ocean of existence is calling us to Brazil, like my beloved Angkor is. We say yes, this is an opening. Because love is leading the way. Love is the impelling force. Do I have to know what it's going to look like? No. So could the student and the teacher coexist within each one of us? Because Bert's getting so old, I find myself seeking help. And one of the teacher inspirer friends of mine is a man named Stephen Levine. He and his wife, Andrea, have written several books on Who Dies Anyway, Conscious Living, Conscious Dying. They work with the hospice program. And I thought they might be able to give me some insight on how to embrace this sacred dance I'm doing with a 112-year-old dog. He's 16 years old, times 7, I guess that's 112. And what they said really touched my heart. And this is where we learn. Stephen Levine said, when you're very young, everything seems to be physical, very tactile. You know, you've got your little two-year-old daughter, and they want physical stuff. They like to roll down hills. I can remember as a five-year-old rolling down the hill as a golf course. When I became at my age now, I think about rolling down a hill. I don't actually roll down hills. Trey asked me if I could still do cartwheels. I said I could maybe try, but I might fall over because I used to be able to do all this acrobatic stuff at a certain age. So Stephen Levine says, when you're young, everything's physical, and you approach life from the sensorium of our being. But as we evolve, he says, we move more into our mind. And then when you're more mental, you have goals, you have plans, you have desires, you have intentions. And then the mind begins to run your life. But Stephen Levine says, when you get older, and he says they spend so much of the time in the hospice program and the nursing homes, the older people are no longer having goals and desires. They're more resting in their heart space. And they're more embracing the moment. Someone in our revealing service says, I just want to, it was beloved Nancy, I want to be in the moment where every moment is sacred. And let me tell you, when I'm walking around the block, taking one step and then another step, maybe a sniff and then another step, I'm saying I'm going through a sacred walk with a very old sacred soul. And even he gets excited to see Chris walk out of his door, and he'll turn and he'll try to get his prance going. But then Chris meets him halfway, and then Chris kisses him on the head. And you see there's this little dance of love going. So could, when we get to that heart space, the mind slows down and the heart opens, and it's helping me with Bert. So Stephen Levine said, when people get ready to make their transition, they mostly move from the heart right through the crown chakra and enter into the light. How beautiful. And so as the student self is approaching this, he's giving me the gift of, we move from a physical orientation in life to maybe a mental orientation, and ultimately we begin to rest in this heart space from which we can transcend whenever spirit chooses to leave the body. So that helped me as a student of truth to be present with my own experience. Now, life gives us the exact experience we need. Every one of you out there, we had a beautiful revealing service, and each one of us is having our own unique challenges. Could we see that not as a problem, which is the student self would be, I got to fix it, get rid of it, and go on to something else? No, no, no. It's not about being the student self. It's about being the teacher soul, saying that this is here to teach me something beautiful. Then you approach it that it has a gift. You know, when my first relationship ended and I was bereft because I thought everything centered on this relationship and it fell apart, and I struggled with it and struggled with it and struggled with it until I realized it wasn't about the relationship with the other person, it was about a relationship with myself. And could I not abandon this one? And so what appeared to be a problem was really a beautiful gift. And that has been the truth of my life. It still is the truth of my life. This too is good. This too is of God. And I demand to see the blessing. So it's a whole different shift in the way we approach it. So what is the teacher? I used to think the teacher was somebody outside that was there to inform me, but now I have a whole different concept of what teacher is. The Sufi master that I studied with, he said, the outer teacher takes you to the inner teacher, but the greatest teacher is life. And he said, and if the outer teacher doesn't take you to your inner teacher, they're not worthy of being your teacher. So what does that say? You get to undress that a little bit. There is this catalyst out here, and you could call Bert, my old dog, my teacher. You're all my teacher. But what you get to do, and what life gets to do, remember, life is the great teacher. It takes us to this part of ourselves that gets to reflect, that gets to say, where is grace here? You know, could I listen to the still small voice that's speaking to me, that's guiding me? Or am I going to dismiss that still small voice and I'm going to stubbornly launch ahead with my plan when the universe is shifting the plan? Remember, everything changes. Everything is connected. Bless you. So pay attention. When life is moving you in a new direction, I remember the first day I've had made so many mistakes, if you want to do it, where you think life is moving you in this direction and then it goes in a completely different direction. The very first day I was in law school, I actually went to law school for one day, and I'm sitting at this desk, and that voice, Susan Jackson, said, this will kill you. This will kill you. I left. I never went back. Then I went to get another degree. I was supposed to be a teacher because my husband wanted me to be a teacher so we could both be teachers and have the summers off. So I grudgingly went back, got a certification to be a teacher, and it was the first day of student teaching. That same still small voice said,
"This won't kill you. This won't kill you."
I went home that afternoon and I said, I'm not going to be a teacher. After we'd spent all this time and all this money for you to get this certification. He says, "Well, whatever you do, don't become a minister." I had never thought of that. Never even crossed my mind. So you see, when we get out of our own way, the path appears. And sometimes the path is not something you created, but your heart created. There is a beautiful practice in the Inca tradition. And when you're kind of a crazy man like me, you get your guidance from all these different sources. So I began to study with the shamans, especially the ones from Peru. And they say there's only one law in the Peruvian shamanic spirituality. And that's, I like it when there's only one. And that one rule is called sacred reciprocity. That says, if you have been blessed, then you owe it to the world to give back. And we all know what that means. If you have an ounce of compassion and love in you, well, there's someone out there who has a cry for love. Could you extend that to the other? That's this beautiful sacred reciprocity, to give the gift of your soul and realize that when you think you're the one that's serving, you're really the one that's being served. It's so counterintuitive. Every time I help another, I'm the one that's helped. So this is this beautiful dance that we're doing with life. Life is the great teacher, and life will give you everything that you need in advance of your asking. It's interesting, Gigi has known many people who've made their transition, and Raul has this friend who's a psychic. And without exception, like there's one young lady who had Down syndrome, and she came through this reading saying that my soul chose this. This wasn't an accident. It's not like a curse. There was an intention of the soul. So when we have these certain things that we think are not pleasant things, but there are challenge, could we know that it's a part of our soul's journey? My beloved Adam had a stroke, and I think it woke him up to a much different level of awareness. I had a heart attack. I glimpsed death. Now, unlike my beloved Paul, he transitioned into the light. I got to come back. But I came back, and all of a sudden, all this unhealed stuff came up. And I thought, is this the grace of the heart attack? All this unmet stuff, these abandoned children within myself, I didn't realize were there. Could I be still enough to embrace them and to see it as a sacred journey? So what that shares with my soul is when life gives us these abgos, another bloody growth opportunity, could we embrace those and say, this is here for me so that I can then navigate in a different way, so that I might have compassion at a deeper level, so that my patience might be just walking an old dog around the corner. What a beautiful, grace-filled opportunity that is. So I was thinking of the student self and the teacher self, and I reflected on when I studied with the Sufis. Gigi and I went over to Istanbul, and we traveled throughout Turkey with the Sufis. And they have a whole different approach to the student and the teacher. The teacher is the beloved. The teacher is Allah. And the student is the dervish. And the dervish meets in a community. You could call it a sangha. And all the student is to do, you talk about simple putting your attention on the self, all they're here to do is to remember that all there is God. And so you will, as a group, and I was thinking of maybe doing this as my class in August, where we would have an experiential aspect to the student teacher. So we'd all be going, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah. That means all there is God. All there is God. All there is God. And when you chant that enough, you realize there ain't no spot where God is not. So if it's all God and I'm remembering God, well, then what happens to my problem? The me person who has all these issues and these stories and these addictions to the story and my stuff and that, well, it just kind of falls away because you're not putting your attention. You're remembering that all there is this presence. And Kabir Helminski, in this beautiful book called The House of Remembering, he says, you begin to see God in Barbara Rollins. You begin to see God in Gigi Mejia. You begin to see God in Michael Short. And then you realize that you need each other to see the reflection of the very thing that you are. That's why there's the importance of the Sangha, to see God reflected everywhere. It's all you. It's harder to do it all isolated by yourself, where you're meditating in a cave and you're knowing everything is God, but you put yourself in a garden where there's flowers of love shining back at you, and you're, God, I'm seeing beauty everywhere. That's because beauty is awakening in here. I'm seeing love everywhere. That's because love is awakening in here. So he says there is the necessity of the community. When Shannon walked in the church last week, my heart just skipped a beat. And it was just love meeting love. And you know, when I had the photograph of her wedding picture on my desk, because I see the love with her and Matt that was so vibrant that day, and it takes me back into that remembrance. What if it's all love? So let me give you just a tiny taste of the Sufi tradition. It's so beautiful. He says, coherence. He says, we're creating and attaining a coherence within the individual self. The coherence is a higher vibration. We're raising our vibration. Like, take Seth and put him with Pepper and see the coherence. Put him with Lizzie, see the coherence. That's what you're going to create, a coherent field of love. So this is what they do in the Tekka. He says, coherence comes from a deep center within us, which is the heart. And ultimately, it is the heart of the human being that's connected to this infinite spirit. The whole practice, the student self wants a practice, they have only one practice. It's called polishing the mirror of the heart. Jesus would say, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So what if we could keep our heart focused on love? Where'er so e'er we look, we see the face of love, we see the face of God, we see the joy, we see the peace, we see the beauty, coherence. So he's going on to explain, ultimately, it's the heart of the human being connected to the infinite spirit. And when the self, that's you and me, is connected to the heart, and the heart is connected to God, well, then you have coherence. And it is really that simple. The practice that we call the remembrance of God is the channel to coherence. I am remembering who I am. And just remembering that if all there is God, and I'm God, then when you look at your little girl, you see God. When you look at Matt, you see God. When you look at your neighbor, you see God. When you look at the one you perceive to be the enemy, you still see God because all there is God. So this is the path of remembering. And he would also say the path of forgetting. Sometimes we forget who we are and we get all lost in our reaction and our judgment. And it's not a bad thing because we all forget. But then you just take a deep breath like I shared with you, give a sigh for the divine, and you're remembering. So lastly, he says, it's an infinitely developable capacity of the heart to sense a spiritual reality, a reality that is beautiful, a reality that is intelligent, a reality that is generous, a reality where longing to be in relationship, it's longing to be in relationship with us. Could we have that shift in our reality? Not where it's about me, but it's about something so much bigger. So the teacher comes, and there's a beautiful saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And the teacher appears in many, many different disguises. It could be an animal that shows up at your doorstep. It could be someone who pushes all your buttons, who is showing you compassion and forgiveness. So when we look at everything as a teacher, as a doorway, then we let go of the resistance. And you know, I've shared with you, and this is basic 101. You want religious science 101? I'll give you a basic, simple lesson. And when I was a dancer, I used to love to take the beginning dance class. And you know why? Because in the beginning dance class, you work on alignment. You work on your turnout, your shoulders, your vest, your stomach, your everything. And the same is true for spirituality, the simple alignment. So what is the simple reality around spirituality? And it just went right out of my head. That's a senior moment, isn't it, Sylvia? But you know what? It'll pop back in when it's meant to pop back in. But basically, it's that everything is here for us, and how we perceive it is oftentimes our challenge. And so when life gives us this something that is uncomfortable, like when my abandoned little boy came up, instead of treating him, getting rid of him, I had to invite him in and ask him what he needed. That's the Brené Brown material. When this vulnerable side comes in, it's not about getting rid of my vulnerable little self. It's about embracing him or her. You know, when I studied with the shamans and I studied with Michael Harner, I was also studying religious science, and my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, said, we do not do the shamanic thing. And I said, well, maybe you don't, but I do. So I'm there and they're pounding the drum and they're taking us to these alternate states of reality, and you're supposed to call your spirit animal in. And I'm expecting a gazelle, a lion, a tiger, something exotic, and who should wander in? He just wandered in. And then you're supposed to ask your spirit animal a question. And I said, how can we create peace on earth? And he started sliding down the ice into the water, sliding down the ice in the water. And it says, how can we deal with the hatred on the planet? And I saw him with a little egg under his thing, and he's sitting over the egg, and then they're tending the egg. And basically what he was saying in his symbology was just love where you are and have fun and work within the community. So something as abstract as a penguin came into my experience as a teacher. And then this Sunday morning, he shows up in the form of Barbara Rowland sitting in my chair saying, don't forget me. We don't have to have an erudite form of teacher. It doesn't have to be the guru, because remember how you spell guru, it's G-U-R-U. And the sadguru is the one that awakens within. So what is it going to take to awaken the teacher within? You know, everything is a pointer toward the truth, everything. Whether it's a penguin, whether it's these yantras in the window, these are the symbols of the world religions, all the world's religions. And you could say they're all different, but they're all pointing to the same thing. They're pointing to that still point within ourselves, the God within, the center within, the Buddha Christ, consciousness within. So could we only do one thing, Ramana says, is attend to the self. We just finished our Parker Palmer class, and he talks about attending to the self, and he talks about how older people need younger people and younger people need older people, because there's that generativity. A Ralph Waldo Emerson needed a young Henry David Thoreau, because Thoreau was embodying the very things that Emerson was conceptualizing. So what if when we bring the old and young together, there is a generativity, there is an aliveness that comes? Could we find that in our own life as a practice, as an active practice for living? My friend Wanda Gale sent me a book, and it's controversial. I love when she sends me controversial things. And she says it would be wonderful to have a book study group on this, but I thought this was too controversial for a religious science center, even for me. And it's called The We Consciousness. And this book is written by a lady named Karen Noe. And on, I think it was in 2015, Wayne Dyer had a sudden heart attack when he was in Maui. And that same day, Wayne Dyer starts speaking to this lady from the other side. She ends up writing a book from Wayne Dyer's perspective. And what that says to me is that spirit was never born and spirit never dies. Someone sent me a website, I think it was through Raul, the NDERF, the Near Death Experience Research Foundation. A gazillion reports on how when you die, you don't really die. Your body dies, your spirit enters into this, what he calls the we consciousness. And I love how he expressed what the we consciousness is. You know, we're so big on saying, I am, and we got the me stuff going on. He says, but Wayne Dyer says on the other side, he says, there really is no Wayne anymore. I've entered into what they call the we consciousness, because we're all one. So he says, when you want me to speak, he said, it's the we consciousness speaking through me. So could I suspend, and this is another Wayne Dyer idea, could I suspend my disbelief and open to the possibility that we are multidimensional beings? And, you know, I feel their presence all the time. When I look at Barbara Rowlands, I see Paul. I see Joe right here in Sylvia's smile. So what if they don't really die? They just shift out. Paul Fulford is still my very best friend on this plane, and I know when my time is going to come, he's going to be there for me. Now, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? Sweet old Bert at 112, he was so in love with baby Speck. And she died of cancer. And when she died, the strangest thing happened. She went into him. He never once played with the ball in 10, 12 years of his life. All of a sudden, she passes, and she was like Pepper. She loved to play with the ball. All of a sudden, Bert now is throwing balls in the air. And then he did even the worst thing. He threw the ball at Trey. That's what Speckles used to do. And then if you didn't pick up the ball and throw it, Speckles would take her nose and push the ball right at you. So Bert's nose goes down to that ball, and he pushes the ball right at Trey. He and I looked at each other like we're haunted by a dog. What's that all about? Bert had no fear of thunder and lightning. Speckles was terrified. All of a sudden, we get one of our thunderstorms, and he's shaking like a leaf in the bathroom, just like she would do. So we said, are we crazy? And I said, maybe he's sharing his body with her. Could I suspend a belief system and just enter into the mystery of all of this? You know, he's getting addled now, and he waddles to her room when he can manage to stand where she used to sleep. She had her bed in the guest bedroom. He waddles over to where her bed was, as if he's expecting her to be there. Am I making too much out of this with my mind, or am I just saying, this is the mystery of the we consciousness unfolding? So, yeah, They're still here with us. You know, they may die in form, but their spirit is with us. So let me just give you a taste of Wayne Dyer from the dead. Wayne speaks. Be a great name for a book, wouldn't it? He says, when you instead say we are, he says, you affirm from the perspective of being a co-creator with God that is within all of us. Huh. There's a wonderful saying in New Thought that says, the most important sentence you can say is I am, and then you fill in the blank. So you say, I am unworthy. Well, that's what you're putting into the law. But if you change that to say, I am worthy, I am beautiful, I am grateful, you're beginning to create as a co-creator with the universe. Because the word is in your mouth, a blessing or a curse. This is what Moses said, according to how you use it. So what are you affirming in this lifetime? So he's saying the same thing, but he says, instead of saying, I am beautiful, he says, could we say, we are beautiful. We are capable. We are the one life unveiling itself. Then there's no separation. And that's the challenge. That's attending to the self. So here's how he says it. Instead of saying I am, we'll say we are. And after saying we are, just add whatever it is that you wish to attain. We are peace. Her whole motive in this whole book is to establish peace on earth. And peace can only be established on earth when peace is established in our heart. So we are peace, he says. We are divine. We're all divine. We are love. All there is love. It's not a commodity. It's not something you have with just one person. We are love itself. We are abundant. My God, what an abundant life. Look at the flowers outside. You walk Bert late at night and you're surrounded by lightning bugs. We are abundant in lightning bugs. How many of us take time to see the lightning bugs? Or to hear the birds sing? My beloved Marie over here wakes up and hears the birds sing and starts cooing back to them because she knows she's not separate. We are the birds singing. We are the song of life. We are perfect health. And whatever it is that you want to experience in your life, we are harmony in all relationships. Well, then expect to have harmonious relationships. He says, this is, then watch the miracles begin to unfold, thank you, Wayne Dyer, in your life and in the lives around you. Watch the miracles unfold when you start affirming a greater reality for yourself. All my relationships are harmonious and peaceful. Say that with me.
All my relationships are harmonious and peaceful.
Can you feel into that? If you don't feel into it, you're not going to have harmonious and loving relationships. Wherever I look, I see the face of God.
Wherever I look, I see the face of God.
Now, if your mind says that's BS, well, you're not going to be able to see the face of God. But if you can see the face of God in the smallest of things, you know, I have this painful experience that happens to the David Leonard person. And I was driving to work this morning, it was 7:15, there was no traffic, it was so peaceful, and all of a sudden a squirrel decided he was going to take his life by running under my tires. And I nearly went off the road, I know, and I said, why me, Tia? I'm the most sensitive person. He had to do, I tried to swerve, it didn't work, I heard the little thud, and I'm going, I know. And then I had to work on myself, you know, there is no death, you know, his beautiful life is still here, he's just not in the squirrel form, and he's here to teach me at some level, if I cannot react and get mad at myself, you know, isn't that funny how we do that to ourselves, when we don't need to do that? So yes, the we consciousness is alive and well in all of us. And I wanted to close by bringing the gardener into this particular talk. Wayne Dyer, in that lovely book, The We Consciousness, he says, we're all sowing seeds like a gardener sows. You know, we are peaceful, we're sowing the seed of peace. We are harmonious, we're sowing the seed of harmony. We are understanding, we are listening. Whatever works for you. Michael's doing a lot of deep listening. We are accepting everybody where they are. He says, these are seeds that you're planting. That's what a gardener knows. And Ernest Holmes says, if you plant a carrot seed, don't expect a turnip. So what seeds are you sowing in consciousness? What are you affirming? I live in a, you know, 45 years with my partner. We live in a harmonious, loving relationship. I give him room to grow and to be who he is. Do we grow in the same path? Not necessarily. He loves to gamble. I don't like to gamble. You know, he found an app on his phone where he can gamble on these games. I don't know what it is. And he said, it's more fun than going to the casino. So I said, well, go to your room and play on your video game. And so he's up there playing on his game, doing his casino thing. And I'm out gardening, having my fun with the fish and the things. So could we give each other space to grow and in that create harmony in our relationship? So the gardener, the old man, he has a young apprentice. And he's trying to share with the young apprentice how to see life as the great teacher. One of the things Parker Palmer says in our wonderful class is go to nature. Nature is the thinnest oracle to spirit. And say to the tree, teach me and show me the way, and the tree will show you. Say to the rock, teach me and show me the way, and the rock will show you. Say to the stream, the water, teach me and show me the way. The water will say, you don't need to be a stagnant pond. You need to be flowing, you know? And so everything is a gospel. So here's how the teacher speaks to the student, and he so beautifully describes life as the great teacher. This is one of my favorite books. So here's the gardener with the young man. And the young man says, no, he says to the young man, it's time that you were learning the language of life, dear boy. And the boy says, the language of life, says the apprentice, intrigued. Well, what's the language of life? He said, it's the language that the world which surrounds you expresses itself in, the way the rest of the universe communicates with you. Now imagine someone saying, listen to the universe as it communicates to you, uniquely to you. We have to really learn to listen deeply. He says, I think I understand you, said the young boy. With you, I've learned, he says to the gardener, to read the trees, to listen to the flowers, to listen to the birds, Marie, to feel the insects, and to discover the hidden lessons in everything that surrounds me. And the gardener nods his head. He says, sometimes nature slash life tries to speak to you directly, and it's trying to send you a message. Now, you have to be still in order to have that coherence, in order to hear a language that's by its very nature silent. It's Eckhart Tolle that said, silence is the language of God, and everything else is a poor translation. So could we be able to hear this silent language in a deeper way? He's asking the young boy to do that. And he says, and how will I know that life is trying to tell me something? The young man asked. How am I going to know that the rock is talking to me? He says, you'll simply know, the gardener answered. There is something within everything and everyone that lets them know that what has just happened actually means something. Something important that one has to decode. Huh. It's showing you something. It's showing you something. One day I'd come back from a spiritual retreat in Northern California where it was largely silent. And I'm going to catch the plane in San Francisco. And I went to Golden Gate Park where they have this aquarium type place. And I went into the aquarium and I'm seeing all the birds and all the fish and the tanks and the big fish and all these. And, you know, I'm kind of in an altered state, having been in silence for so long. And I found myself standing at a very little tank, and it had one little seahorse in, all by himself. And he's staring at me, and I'm staring at the seahorse. And he's all by himself in this tiny little cage. Tears are coming down my face because I'm feeling his loneliness. He's all by himself. He's stuck in a little tiny cage. People must have thought I was crazy. Well, everything is speaking to you. He says, coincidences, and I'll still see his face, coincidences do not exist, says the gardener. And when something happens that calls our attention in a special way, it's because there's a message behind it. There's something shining through that wants you to see it. But it requires that we be still, Nancy, and stop long enough and hear it. How does one read this message, the young man asked. He says, not with your head. He said, says the gardener, but with your heart. The language of life is in some ways similar to the language of our dreams. It speaks in images that makes an impact on our heart. Images that create clear sensations that allow our mind to open up and deeply understand. Could we see an image and let it speak to our soul? You know, whatever that image is. And he says, when the heart is prepared to listen, nothing happens just because it feels like it. And he says, I think I understand you, says the apprentice, but I would need some time to be able to read clearly this language of life. And the gardener looked at him with deep love in his eyes. And he said, "You've got all the time in the world, young man," he said. "Make use of it. Open your heart to this life that you've been given and listen to it. And the messages will become clear to your soul under the pleasant robe of silence. Because your teacher soul will awaken and it will say, 'I hear you. This is here for me.'" So let's just take a silent moment and go within and see the teacher soul and the student self come together as one. So when we are curious and fascinated with the mystery of belonging to the universe, that would be our student self. Curiosity, fascination, imagination, all our student self. And we need him, her, to open the doorway to the inner teacher, to the Sadguru within, to the one that knows that everything is here, not by coincidence, but by divine order. And if we resist it, well, they say what we resist persists. So we no longer resist the very thing that is our challenge, but we make it our opportunity. If it's judgment, we invite judgment in. If it's fear, we invite fear in. If it's anxiety, we invite anxiety in to this spacious heart space. And we ask the anxious one, the fearful one, the critical one, "What do you need?" And then through lowly listening, we begin to hear with our hearts what is being shown to us as the great teacher of life once again is here serving the unfoldment of the species called humanity through our own unique life form. Divine love moving through our breath, through our eyes, through our thoughts, sees things in an entirely different way than judgment, fear, or anxiety would see. And so as the student of truth, we enter into a community where our hearts are coherent. We resonate to the same vibration of acceptance, accepting the things that we cannot change, and the courage to change the things that maybe we can. And the only thing that we really can possibly change is our own self, not to change others. And so rather than seeking to change the self, could we open to the inevitable change of life as we evolve from a physical orientation to a mental orientation to a heart-centered orientation, to a we consciousness that says it's all me. And if I judge another, I'm judging my own self. This is the awakening of humanity to its true nature, which is one life, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And so we realize that we're being done. We're being done by what Emerson called the Orphic voice, the voice of God. And so when we can become still enough, when our mind is put to rest, we have the capacity to know something so deeply personal and so intimately vast. And it reveals itself when we are ready. As the Buddha said himself, when conditions are right, things manifest. And so we wait upon the Lord, the law, the spiritual law, as love leads the way and law makes the way possible. I invite you to enter into that heart space with me by placing your hand on your heart. And let's come together in the heart salutation. If you would repeat after me, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of myself. The beloved within me bows to the beloved within you.
In this space we are one.
And there is only one.
And we serve the one
by opening to its radiant beams of light.
by opening to its radiant beams of light.
And letting our light shine. So open your radiant eyes, open your hearts, open your hands, let your light shine so that the darkness comprehendeth it not. It's your job, it's my job, and it's the only job worth doing. Thank you for sending in your tithes. Thank you for showing up here with your beautiful faces. And namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
To make a change, to create a brand new life.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new life.